Again, this is the word of the Lord. King Belshazzar made a great feast for 1,000 of his lords and drank wine in front of 1,000. Belshazzar, when he had tasted the wine, commanded that the vessels of gold and of silver that Nebuchadnezzar his father had taken out of the temple in Jerusalem be brought, that the king and his lords, his wives, and his concubines might drink from them. Then they brought in the golden vessels that had been taken out of the temple, the house of God in Jerusalem. And the king and his lords, his wives, and his concubines drank from them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and silver, bronze, iron, wood, and stone. Immediately the fingers of a human hand appeared and wrote on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace opposite the lampstand. And the king saw the hand as it wrote. Then the king's color changed and his thoughts alarmed him. His limbs gave way and his knees knocked together. The king called loudly to bring in the enchanters, the Chaldeans, and the astrologers. The king declared to the wise men of Babylon, "Whoever reads this writing and shows me its interpretation shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around his neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom." Then all the king's wise men came in, but they could not read the writing or make known to the king the interpretation. Then King Belshazzar was greatly alarmed, and his color changed, and his lords were perplexed. The queen, because of the words of the king and his lords, came into the banqueting hall, and the queen declared, "O king, live forever. Let not your thoughts alarm you or your color change. There is a man in your kingdom in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. In the days of your father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, were found in him. And King Nebuchadnezzar, your father, the king, made him chief among of the magicians, enchanters, Chaldeans, and astrologers. Because an excellent spirit, knowledge and understanding to interpret dreams, explain riddles, and solve problems were found in this Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Now let Daniel be called, and he will show the interpretation." Then Daniel was brought in before the king. The king answered and said to Daniel, "You are that Daniel, one of the exiles of Judah, whom the king, my father, brought from Judah. I have heard of you that the spirit of the gods is in you, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom are found in you. Now, the wise men, the enchanters, have been brought in before me to read this writing and make known to me its interpretation, but they could not show the interpretation of the matter. But I have heard that you can give interpretations and solve problems. Now, if you can read the writing and make known to me its interpretation, you shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around your neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom." And Daniel answered and said before the king, "Let your gifts be for yourself and give your rewards to another. Nevertheless, I will read the writing to the king and make known to him the interpretation. O king, the Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar, your father, kingship and greatness and glory and majesty. And because of the greatness that he gave him, all peoples, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him. Whom he would, he killed, and whom he would, he kept alive. Whom he would, he raised up, and whom he would, he humbled. But when his heart was lifted up and his spirit was hardened so that he dealt proudly, he was brought down from his kingly throne, and his glory was taken from him. He was driven from among the children of mankind, and his mind was made like that of a beast, and his dwelling was with the wild donkeys. He was fed grass like an ox, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, until he knew that the Most High God rules the kingdom of mankind and sets over it whom he will. And you, his son Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, though you knew all this. But you have lifted up yourself against the Lord of heaven. And the vessels of his house have been brought in before you, and you and your lords, your wives and your concubines have drunk wine from them. And you have praised the gods of silver and gold, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone, which do not see or hear or know. But the God in whose hand is your breath, and whose are all your ways, you have not honored. Then from his presence this hand was sent, and the writing was inscribed. And this is the writing that was inscribed, Mene, Mene, Tekel, and Parson. This is the interpretation of the matter. Mene, God has numbered the days of your kingdom and brought it to an end. Tekel, you have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. Perez, your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. Then Belshazzar gave the command, and Daniel was clothed with purple. A chain of gold was put around his neck, and a proclamation was made about him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. That very night, Belshazzar the Chaldean was killed, and Darius the Mede received the kingdom, being about 62 years old. As far as the reading of God's Word, you can be seated. Well, a couple weeks ago, as we considered Daniel chapter 4, we made reference to that this morning. There was a clear statement on what the chapter was about, a refrain that we heard again and again repeated throughout chapter 4. That is, the Most High rules the kingdom of men and gives it to whomsoever he wills. What was the explicit theme, though, in chapter 4, stated numerous times in that chapter, we might say, is the implied theme for all the other chapters that we've seen so far, and also the chapters that we will see as we move forward. It is actually expressly stated in verse 21 of this very chapter. It says in verse 21 here of chapter 5 that until, that is, his body was wet with the dew of heaven, speaking of Nebuchadnezzar, he ate grass like an ox, until he knew that the Most High God rules the kingdom of mankind and sets over it whom he will. What we see in these chapters is that theme, again and again, that despite the way things appear to be, the Lord, the one who is the Most High God, the King of heaven, he is actually in control, and he is present, as we've seen again and again, he is present with his people. So consider it. The Lord brought Babylon to power. He gives it to whomsoever he wills. In chapter 1, he's preserved Daniel and the three Hebrews, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, as we know them. He's preserved them in chapter 1. In chapter 2, he revealed how world empires rise and fall through the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had. In chapter 3, he preserved those three Hebrews with in the fiery furnace as he delivered them in the midst, despite the king's decree. In chapter 4, he humbled Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. Here in chapter 5, he judges the kingdom of Babylon and Belshazzar the king, and he transfers that kingdom into the hands of the Medes and the Persians. In the next chapter, he will preserve Daniel in the den of lions. And then in chapter 7, we'll see that he will establish the Son of Man's universal and everlasting kingdom. And then so on and so on as we make our way through the rest of the book. But chapter 5, as we do see this theme implied, and we might say even in verse 21 expressly stated, chapter 5 now in the context moves us forward. Not only in the narrative, the immediate narrative of the book, but it moves us forward in history with a considerable amount of time. According to scholars, this is some 66 years after Daniel was first taken into exile. And so we are moving along pretty good. Nebuchadnezzar's son, evil Merodach, as we were introduced to him, what a name, right? We were introduced to him at the end of 2 Kings, reigned in his place. He was the one who elevated Jehoiakim above the other conquered kings, remember, and set him at his table. He was assassinated, and then we have another of kings succeed each other after that, until finally this Belshazzar, who is on the throne. He is referred to as Nebuchadnezzar's son. The word can be understood, as the Aramaic term can be understood as descendant, and there's a reason why he is called that. He wants to be identified, likely, with Nebuchadnezzar. It's a place of honor to think about all that Nebuchadnezzar had accomplished in this great world empire. To call Belshazzar his son is to connect him to that history and to that great king. But this Belshazzar is really a de facto king. His father is the de jure king, the true king of Babylon. But he is in a self-imposed exile. And so Belshazzar is reigning really for his absentee father. Now, in this chapter, we continue to see as we move from Belshazzar to Darius the Mede, the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians, right? The gold statue, the head gives way to the silver of the shoulders and the chest now from Nebuchadnezzar's dream in chapter 2. We continue to see how the Lord appoints and dismisses kings. We see that he is the mover behind the scenes. It's interesting that there is a hand that appears. God himself is the one who moves with an invisible hand, orchestrating history according to his own purposes. He's the one to whom all men, regardless of their status and power, that we are ultimately held accountable. As we see this and move forward now in the narrative, there are two things that we can note from this chapter that I'd like us to consider The first is the passing nature of the present age. This has to do with the party and all that we see and how quickly everything comes to a screeching halt. The passing nature of the present age. But then we see with the appearance of this hand and the interpretation Daniel gives and the judgment upon Babylon and King Belshazzar, we see the pressing reality of the age to come. The passing nature of this present age and the pressing reality of the age to come. Let's think for a moment about the passing nature of the present age. We see in chapter 5, verse 1, that this chapter begins with a party. King Belshazzar is here drinking wine with 1,000 of his lords. So this party is characterized by intoxication, but it's also characterized by idolatry. He profanes the vessels from the Lord's house in Jerusalem. Remember, these are the things that were associated with God's worship in the temple. They were taken from Jerusalem during the deportation by Nebuchadnezzar. But we never find Nebuchadnezzar going quite this far as Belshazzar did, that he would use these vessels in this way to drink from them at his party, but to do so while, as we read, he praised the gods of these precious metals like gold and silver and wood and stone. These gods fashioned from human hands. This is why Daniel says toward the end of the chapter, this is why all of this is coming upon him. You have praised the gods of silver, of gold, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone, which do not see or hear or know, but the God in whose hand is your very breath and whose are all your ways you have not honored. Rather, he profaned the vessels of this very God's house, the Lord's house, while he praised these idols. Well, during the feast, something startling happens, right? The fingers of a human hand appear and begin to write a message on the wall. Opposite, we read, of where the lampstand from the temple is standing. So likely, the lampstand would have been illuminated. Opposite from the lampstand, the hand appears and writes on the wall. You get the idea that everyone is able to see this as the wall is illuminated by the lampstand. So everyone could see it, but at the same time, the message was not clear. This appearance, now it may have been that they could have read the words. They appear in Aramaic, and so they likely could have read, but they couldn't put it all together to interpret what it was saying. But this appearance is so disturbing. And you can imagine how disturbing this must have been to see this. But Belshazzar is terrified. His color and his countenance changes. He's frightened. The scripture says his knees knock together. Many believe this is a euphemism, a way of saying, a more polite way of saying that he lost control of his bodily functions. So here is a man and a party. Clearly not concerned with the living and true God, right? Daniel says, you have not honored the God in whose hand is your very breath. They mock him. They profane the furnishings of his house, the things that were meant and associated with his worship. They misuse his gifts. They give honor to gods that are not gods. They're only concerned with the present. They're only concerned with this life. But then the party comes to a screeching halt with this with the appearance of this hand, with the message written on the wall. And just as sobering as this scene was for Belshazzar, we have to realize that this fact should be equally sobering for us. The party will come to an end for each of us. And that if we're only concerned with this present life, we are, like Belshazzar, in trouble. Death is the great equalizer of us all, whether we are a prince or a pauper. It seems here that Belshazzar, historically, we could even say, Belshazzar was not concerned about the advancements of the Medo-Persian army. And they had been making advancements against him and against his kingdom. Babylon the Great was seen as an impregnable fortress. It was secure within its walls, and you hear sometimes of how great this wall was, very tall, but also very wide. And they say, historians say two, some say as many as six, somewhere between two and six chariots were able to race side by side on the top of this wall. And then it was also surrounded by a great river. But then the very last verse of this chapter tells us that very night Babylon fell. Belshazzar's life and his reign came to an end. The party was over. And we look at this party and we see all that's taking place and we say this is folly. You know, what a folly this party was. But equally, it is folly when men, regardless of rank, when we live our lives as if this party is all that there is, as though this life is all that there is. We're only concerned with this present world. We give no thought to how fleeting it is and how it is passing. We give no thought to the God of heaven. Sometimes we may even thumb our nose at him as Belshazzar did. But this is the God to whom we will all give an account. The God who judged Belshazzar. And so if we continue to live as though the party will go on forever, then we too are fools. Someone has said, and I'm sure many have said this, I knew I would die one day. I just never thought it would be this day. Well, Belshazzar knew he would die one day, but he never dreamed it would be this very night during his party. So this is this tells us about the passing nature of the present age. But then, with the appearance of this hand, with Daniel's coming and giving the interpretation, and with the judgment that comes, we find here the pressing reality of the age to come. So the passing nature of the present age, but the pressing reality of the age to come. The Medes and the Persians, yes, they are knocking at the door, as it were. They will, as we see historically, we're told that Babylon fell at night. It seems that this was the very night that Babylon fell as Belshazzar lost his life and the kingdom was given to Darius the Mede. But even though the Medes and the Persians are coming and they're knocking, there's an even more pressing knock at the door, an even more pressing reality. And this is what happens with the appearance of this hand. What happens next is really a familiar scene. Not about the hand and the writing on the wall, but this whole pattern of what's taking place. So you've heard this before, right? There's a problem with a Babylonian king, or a Babylonian king has a problem because of something the Lord is doing, an intervention. And the king is not able to figure it out, right? We've seen this with Nebuchadnezzar's dreams. And now it's happening with Belshazzar. And so he calls all of his wise men, the enchanters, the astrologers, all. And again, just like with Nebuchadnezzar's dream, they are not able to figure out the interpretation of what was written on the wall. They come up empty. And then again, even though they're offered great power and wealth, they can't come up with anything. Then again, as we've seen again, time and again, Daniel is called in. And so the queen, or the queen mother, says in verse 10, essentially, do you remember him? Do you remember this Daniel? Because in the days of your father, again, or your predecessor, your ancestor, the one who has gone before you, tying him to the greatness of Babylonian glory and the accomplishments of Nebuchadnezzar, in the days of Nebuchadnezzar, this Daniel, whom Nebuchadnezzar brought from Jerusalem to Babylon, he was able to interpret dreams. He has great knowledge and wisdom. The spirit of the gods is in him. And so you need to talk to Daniel. You need to call upon him. And so he is. He summoned. He comes to Belshazzar, and here we find a great contrast. A great contrast between Belshazzar and Belteshazzar. Remember, that's what Daniel's name is given to him as the Babylonian. We find this in verse 12. Because an excellent spirit, knowledge, and understanding to interpret dreams, explain riddles, and solve problems were found in this Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Now let Daniel be called, and he will show the interpretation. So Belshazzar has offered the wise men. Now he offers to Daniel what motivates every man. Great power, great possessions. We'll put this chain around your neck. We'll clothe you in royal garments. We'll make you the third ruler in the kingdom. These are the things that appeal to Belshazzar himself. And so he offers it to these wise men. He offers it to Daniel. But the contrast with Belteshazzar, also known as Daniel here, Daniel says you can keep those things for yourself. You see, his preoccupation is unlike Belshazzar's. It's unlike the king's. It's not with this passing world. But Daniel's preoccupation is with another world. And the hand that writes this message on the wall is from that world. Is a hand from heaven. The world that Daniel is the kingdom that Daniel is a member of. Now, he essentially says what the queen said to you is true. God, the Most High God, was kind to Nebuchadnezzar. He gave him this great, glorious, majestic kingship. He had great power to raise up and to tear down, to kill and to destroy. Under him were all nations and peoples and languages. He conquered and he brought them to Babylon. But his heart was lifted up in pride. And when his heart was lifted up in pride, he had to be humbled, and he was. And then Daniel says to the king, "But you, Belshazzar, you're like him in this way, in that you too are prideful. You've been lifted up in pride, but you're unlike Nebuchadnezzar in this way." Nebuchadnezzar was humbled by the Lord. He did lift his eyes to heaven. But even though you knew all that became of him, his pride being leading to his fall, and then his humility before the Lord, even though you knew all of that, you refused to humble your heart. You refused to look to heaven as he did. And so your life of rebellion now has culminated in this act of profaning the vessels of the Lord's house, of worshiping idols while refusing to honor the God, again, in whose hand is your very breath and all of your ways, all of your doings. He's the God who gives breath, and he takes away your breath. In his hand is your breath and all your ways. And so he's about to take a breath, and he's not going to give the next one. You're about to be judged. So hear, Daniel says, what was written by the hand, and hear the interpretation. Many, many, tekel, and parson. These are Aramaic words. They mean to be numbered. We see kind of the interpretation. They can be used both in a verbal way and also as nouns, as they refer to even weights and measurements and such. But they mean numbered, weighed, and divided. Meaning, God has numbered, as we read the interpretation that's given to us beginning here in verse 26. Meaning, God has numbered the days of your kingdom, and he's brought it to an end. Tekel, we find, he's weighed you in the balances, and you've been found wanting. And then Perez, now that's the singular form of the plural word parson. And it means divided. He's saying your kingdom is about to be divided. But it also, Perez, the plural word here, sounds like the word for Persia. And so it's not only going to be divided, but it's going to be given to the Persians. And so it's at their hands that Belshazzar will lose his kingdom and he will lose his life. Many, many, tekel, and parson. You have been weighed, you have been found wanting, God has numbered your days, your kingdom's coming to an end. It's about to be divided and given into the hands of the Persians. Despite the bad news here, Belshazzar, he does keep his word. He does give to Daniel this rank as third in the kingdom. He clothes him in purple. He gives him the chain. But that was very short-lived, because we read it was that very night there is a regime change. Belshazzar loses his life. He is killed. But in the grand scheme of things, again, for Daniel, what he was clothed with and the rank he was given, and then to be stripped of that in a moment, really didn't matter. For Belshazzar, it did. Because all he had was the passing nature of this present life, of this present world. And so everything he had was gone. But for Daniel, because Daniel was a member of another kingdom, a greater kingdom, Daniel could say in an old covenant way, like we say in the new covenant, "For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain." You think if you substitute the word Christ with anything else, for me to live is whatever it is we put there, then to die is loss. But with Christ, if to live is Christ, then to die is gain. Something Daniel could say, but King Belshazzar sadly couldn't. Daniel was fixated not on the passing nature of the present age, but fixated on the pressing reality of the age to come, an even greater reality than the phenomenal, what we see here. You see, that hand, again, that hand and message are from another world. It is from the age to come. Michael Brown puts it this way, that it is the judgment of the age to come breaking in on this present evil age. Daniel has the present age and the age to come. He has them in the right perspective. His priorities are correct. You see, the judgments that we find in Scripture, whether it's in the days of Noah, whether it's with the 10 plagues that come upon Pharaoh and Egypt, or whether it's the appearance of this hand, it's an anticipation. It's like a fast forward, a bringing into the presence, a glimpse of the judgment that is to come. It's an anticipation of the final day. But think of Belshazzar again. He should have heard the warning from the life of Nebuchadnezzar, and he should have heeded that warning. He should have repented. He should have not acted in pride. You know, God did not owe Nebuchadnezzar the mercy that he showed to him. As we saw, and it appears that Nebuchadnezzar was truly converted as he acknowledged the Most High God, the King of Heaven. And he also didn't owe Belshazzar anything. The only thing he owed these kings was judgment. And yet the Lord was kind to Nebuchadnezzar. The Lord was kind to Belshazzar in this sense that he made him aware of those events. Again, Daniel said, you knew all of these things. But with the appearance of the hand, it's too late. You think here, Belshazzar, he had all of his life. He heard all of these things. He knew these things. But now it's too late. He's not given any further opportunity to repent. The writing's on the wall, right? It's a done deal. So as we said this morning in Sunday school, some receive mercy, like Nebuchadnezzar. Some receive justice, like Belshazzar. But no one receives injustice from the hand of the Lord. He judges men and nations with a perfect equity. He will not let sin go unchecked indefinitely. He will not let sin and pride go unchecked forever. Now, there is, as there was an invisible hand that was now come to light in the writing on the wall, there is also an invisible line of which we cannot know. And we don't know until after we've crossed it, and then there is no returning. And sadly for Belshazzar, he had crossed that line. But of course, today, as we hear these words, as we would echo the words of Psalm 95, when the Lord said to his people in the wilderness, today, if you hear my voice, do not harden your hearts. Today is the day of salvation. While there is time, we are to heed the warning. And so let us, as Daniel, let us be more concerned with the pressing reality of the age to come than we are with the passing nature of this present evil age. Let us not, as Belshazzar, let us not be lifted up in pride. Rather, let us, as Nebuchadnezzar did, let us humble ourselves and look to heaven. And as the Lord made it known to Belshazzar, right, his mighty works in the past, he knew what the Lord did for Nebuchadnezzar. So also for us, in an even greater way, he's published for all the world to see in his word and the proclamation of the gospel. We know, we have heard of what God has accomplished for sinners in the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And so like Belshazzar, but even more so, we don't have any excuse. So don't let it be said of us as it was said of him, that we've not humbled ourselves, even though we knew all of this. And of course, what was said of Belshazzar, this interpretation that's given here, it was written on the wall and came together in this message to him, that certainly could be said of us. Because the Lord's appraisal of us in our natural state, in our sin, would be the same. Because of our sin, we've been weighed, we've been found wanting. We lack a righteousness to stand before God. Thomas Watson said, though, of the godly man this: he sees that even his best duties weigh many grains too light. And so he desires that Christ's merits be put in the scales. Now that is the good news for sinners. That yes, we are weighed and found wanting. But there is one who was weighed and was found acceptable. His life and his death were accepted by God as the fulfillment of all righteousness and the atonement that we needed. And the fact that God the Father received his work is attested to by his being raised from the dead. And so let us run to him, that in God's sight we might be found acceptable, being found hidden with Christ in God. Let's pray.